front of the door, it's Dave!
Who?
Dave! D-A-V-E!
Dave?
Right, man, Dave.
Dave's not here!
Hey everyone, it's Dave, and welcome to another edition of Just What Do You Think You're Doing, Dave? On today's show, I wanted to talk about Black history and the way we seem to treat Black history, especially in GOP-led states where we're teaching Black history in a very different way. And it's kind of ridiculous and absurd when you think about it. It sort of goes against what we know about slavery and how slavery was and how awful it was. But I've heard certain elected officials say things like, well, you know, it's in the past and we don't want to make white people feel bad for what happened because they weren't involved in it, so why should they feel bad? No, that's for everyone else to feel bad. Everyone else should feel like they're slighted in some way. Certainly don't make white kids feel bad. But anyway, the point is that the state of Florida recently adopted some new guidelines, the new standard for what they're going to teach in Black history. And it is absurd. It's ridiculous. It's stupid. It's a waste of time. I don't even know why. I don't know why this assault happens all the time on people of color, on people of different faiths, of people of different sexual orientations. Why is there constantly an assault on people, on their rights, on understanding our own history? It really irritates me. It rubs me wrong. But the state of Florida is not alone in this. There are several GOP-led legislatures that have adopted similar standards for what they talk about with their students and how they teach things like Black history. For example, the state of Texas, being ahead of the curve, I guess, about 10 years ago, adopted some standards that talked about people that were slaves as being unpaid interns. Can you imagine? Unpaid interns. And they were involuntarily relocated from wherever they came from Africa, as though, you know, somehow, oh, it was just okay, they were involuntarily relocated, like soft-selling it in some way. It makes no sense to me. And there's a lot more that goes on there that happens, but you get the idea. And then the state of Florida, with their recent adoption of things, talks about how these people learn skills that maybe they could use later in life. Really? That's what you're going to say? That's how you're going to soft-pedal and talk about Black history, is you're going to say maybe people learned skills because they were enslaved and forced to work? Really? It's absurd to me. And I can't understand how people just accept this as being okay. Because it's not okay. We've lost our way and lose our focus on what history is and what history means to us. And there's a strong and rich history that goes along with the whole idea of slavery. And it's not necessarily good. Look, I've been a student of history for a long time. I study a lot of things. And my family and I, when we go on vacations, we have a tendency to go visit historical things that are not the literally whitewashed sort of truths. We like to look for the unvarnished truth of what history tells us so we can learn from it and grow from it. So a couple of years ago, we took a trip up to South Carolina and we visited some slave plantations, or I guess they were former slave plantations, and got to the heart of it. And so I wanted to play for you something that I had recorded back then that kind of encapsulates the way I think about this. So I'm going to share that with you. This appeared in one of my other podcasts at some point, but I wanted to share it with you here so you have the context. As you may know, I'm a bit of a history buff, whether it's Disney's history or the history of America. It's interesting to learn about our past and some of the things that have happened and really explore what was going on. And the family and I recently took a trip to Charleston. In fact, that's where I'm recording this right now. I wanted to learn more about the history of slavery and the plantations that were in use around the Charleston area. Charleston's interesting because it had a rich amount of fertilizer in the soil, and it was really good for growing rice, among other things. And rice is very labor intensive, so it took many slaves to grow that rice. And that was what made this a little more intriguing, because it wasn't what you think of as a typical plantation. So we listened and we learned and we went to several plantations and heard unvarnished truths about what slavery was like and how these plantations maintained themselves. Well, the short story is that there were very wealthy people who came to town and wanted to maintain their wealth and their opulence. And so they created this industry where they were using slaves to build their own wealth. I don't think we really understand just how bad it was. These were human beings who were rounded up and shipped to the New World in the cargo holds of ships in inhumane conditions, in terrible situations, to wind up in the New World to be forced into labor. And the reality of it is, the companies that were bringing the slaves over to the New World, they were for-profit companies. They were looking to bring people over to be this labor where they could make money on the slave trade. So they had to fund the ships and the crews and so forth to bring people over. And they had a yield that they were looking at. Yes, the word yield again, right? They wanted 80% of their slaves to make it to the New World. And when they got here, the indignities ensued. They were sold off to various landowners and other people, and they were dehumanized in many ways. The families were separated. They were given new names. Occasionally, they were moved to different farms and sold off back and forth. When they would meet new people and get married in their own ceremonies and have children, the children were often separated from them and given new names as well. And they were separated from each other and given new names. So there was this whole thing where it was all dehumanizing and moving people around in a way that really was not nice in any way. And then, of course, there was the forced labor aspect. They worked 6 days a week doing whatever tasks they were required to. And they had a minimum output that they had to do. If they didn't do that, they were beaten. Seriously. There was a culture of intimidation and other tactics that were used against them to try and make sure that they always met their goals and their deliverables. There were overseers and there were all kinds of other people who made sure that the world was not a good world for them. Life was not good. They lived in little ramshackle shacks with very little food, no running water, nothing really to call their own. They made no money. They couldn't really do anything. And they would live many generations in the same house, many families in similar situations, so that there really was no chance for them to grow as a society other than talking to each other. They weren't allowed to read, of course. They weren't allowed to do anything outside of what they were told to do, except for on their day off, they could grow their own crops and do some things like that on a small plot of land that was available to them. They were also suffering indignity at the time of their death, whether they died in the course of their job or whether they died of disease or whether they just succumbed to something else. They were just simply buried somewhere. The families knew where they were buried, but there were no historical records made of them. So while you see all these old-time cemeteries and all these places that went on, you realize that they're all for white people. The blacks were buried unceremoniously in hillsides. Yes, they were allowed to bury their own, but there was really no record keeping for them, and there's no headstone. So you go to these different places and you see all of these places where you realize there were thousands of people that are buried somewhere in the hillside. Some of these plantations we went to, they haven't even begun to excavate them. Now, I do have to say that I went to Mount Vernon some years ago, and they had started an excavation process. And yes, George Washington was a slave owner, so he had some slaves that were kept on his plantation. These slaves themselves were buried unceremoniously in the hillside. And there was an archaeological process ongoing when I visited, where they were talking about uncovering how they were buried, where they were buried, sort of if they could learn something about the history of these slaves, and maybe even do some DNA testing and learn a little bit more about who they would be ancestors to. When you look at the big picture, the slave population outnumbered the white population in most of the South, certainly in South Carolina, by about 10 to 1. In theory, they could have overpowered the white population and taken over. But it wasn't that easy. Because of this culture of fear and intimidation, and as soon as someone would act up in some way, and it felt like they were going to be a problem, a rabble-rouser, if you will, they were shipped to another farm. So that way they couldn't continue to associate with the people that they used to associate with, so they couldn't build anything. And if someone did manage, or a group managed to escape, they were hunted down by the locals. And they were summarily killed, often very publicly in front of the other slaves, to warn other slaves that if you run away, this will happen to you. With no education, no communication method really beyond your realm there, you had no way to know how extensive or how bad this was. So you were more likely to live by the rules and take your regular beatings and do your work. It's really an unbelievable thing that happened. Flash forward just a little bit, and the Civil War comes. The South loses. Slavery ends. And there's emancipation for all these slaves. And as sort of a reparation, the government decides to chop up all of the land that they used to work, that these slaves were working on, and actually give it to the slaves to tend on their own so they can actually earn some money, to get some things, to make something for themselves. Now they'd have a piece of land to start with. And that was great. Except that when Abraham Lincoln was assassinated, Andrew Johnson passed an executive order that allowed for the original landowners to regain a claim to their land as long as they basically apologized for the past. So, of course, what happened was they took most of the land back by force or through the court system, through the legal system, saying that it wasn't the government's to give to these former slaves. And so the land went back and was retained by the original landowners. So these freed slaves still had nothing. So many of them, staying in the same place that they were in, wound up working for the plantation owners. Now you may ask yourself, why did people stay there after all of this happened? And the short answer is, they wanted to reconnect with some of the people that they knew in their lives, their family members. And the last place they saw them was here, so why not go back to here? And so they wound up working as sharecroppers, indentured servants, some term you want to use, where they were still working on the same land that they were working for before, but now where they were making a small living doing it. And it was a very meager living. And they were given a place to live, which oftentimes was essentially the same slave quarters that they lived in before. And then you had the problem of organizations like the Daughters of the South. Those are family members, mostly women, of the former slave owners. And their intent was to try and propagate the myth that things should have gone differently, that slave owners should have continued to exist. And so they did the things like putting the monuments to Civil War generals and so forth into places where black people lived. They continued to push laws to try and make things difficult for black people. They did everything in their power to try and turn the tide, to make sure that the black person was held down. They made sure that schools were not available. They helped create patrols that would try to round up any black person who was doing anything that might be considered inappropriate or wrong or illegal. They also helped foment the whole Jim Crow era, where there were new laws created to try and hold the black man back further by saying that he couldn't do certain things that whites could. So flash forward again, it's the early 1900s, and now the narrative is changing. The Daughters of the South and other groups have started to come up with ways to say, oh, well, you know, slavery wasn't that bad, and they created romanticized views of what slavery was. And they had paintings commissioned where slaves were working in a way that looked like it was almost idyllic. They were working, they weren't toiling under, you know, someone's lash. They were working, they were, you know, kind of doing some things. And plantation owners who have rebuilt some of their plantations and have people working for them now, but aren't making as much money on cash crops, are now turning around and saying, you know what, we could turn to a new industry called tourism and bring people to our plantations to see our gardens and our different things that we have here. And they started to do just that. And it changed again the nature of it, because you weren't talking about slavery in a sense. You were talking about these beautiful gardens. So you were getting the other white people on your side. And then, of course, there were other things that happened. Like in South Carolina, there was phosphate found under the ground, and that's why the rice grew here so well. But to mine phosphate is also very labor intensive. So they were hiring freed black individuals to come and work. It was backbreaking work. They had a better system than they had ever had, but it was still a lot of work and they were still making very little money. But with industry such as it was, a lot of them turned to it. But the laws that they had created, where they could round up black people for just being black, essentially, meant that a lot of them were incarcerated. And they were selling off the incarcerated to do manual labor for no money. So there was a whole game being played here. This fear and intimidation, this idea of continuing to dominate over people, continued on. Then you flash forward again to the civil rights era and the fact that finally black people were having a say and were standing up and saying, wait a minute, you can't continue to hold us back. It started to change the notion of things a little bit. And you see the tides turn, and we move up to today, where we're seeing that continue to happen. The civil rights movement was about three generations ago when that got started. So you're still kind of close to it. It wasn't that long ago. It takes time for things to heal. And then on the other side of it, you have some of the people who lived in these tiny houses, these slave quarters that had been converted, been modified a little bit. Some of them had electricity and running water. Not all of them, certainly. There were still people who were descendants of the slaves living in those quarters until the early 1990s. The early 1990s, like 30 years ago, there were still people living in these slave quarters. It's unbelievable. These small little hovels that you would have generations in them. You have 15 people living in a single room. You have to wonder how this culture of fear and intimidation and holding people back caused this to happen until then. So here we are, it's a little over a generation since that happened. So it's hard to believe that everything would change overnight. If that was still going on 30 years ago, you got to believe that there was still more work to be done. There's still a lot more work to be done. In reality, nearly everyone in society condoned slavery. There was a couple of groups that specifically didn't condone slavery, the Quakers being the primary example. You could say you had the Jews, the Italians, the Irish, who came to the New World. And in their old world, they were often ostracized and had aspersions cast on them. They were the lowest of the low. And they came to the New World and they found that there was a class even lower than them, the enslaved blacks. And so many times they would go, well, we're going to join the crowd and we're not going to be at the lowest rung anymore. We're going to go ahead and deride the blacks too. And many of them were also slave owners. If they had the means, they would own slaves to take care of their personal business. So you can't just say there were some people who could have stood up, because there really was nobody to stand up. There were some abolitionists, no question. But you realize that just how pervasive this was and how big this all is. So in summary, I've told you this tale about what I've learned about slavery. Much of it I knew already, but it's interesting to put it in perspective and see it firsthand, to actually see what people lived like and what they had going on, and understand just how bad it was. And I'm not asking you to feel in any way that you are responsible for it or that you should feel guilt for it. This is our history, and we need to embrace it. We just need to understand who we are as people and where we come from and the choices we as a society made. Were we wrong? Of course we were. But should we feel shame about it as the current generation? I don't think we should. I'm not trying to say you should feel bad in any way or you should apologize to anyone or anything like that. What I'm just trying to tell you is just understand our history. Just appreciate what it was. Don't whitewash it, as they say. So it's just time for us to stand up and go, you know what? There's more happening here. And it's worth learning about, understanding, and trying to do your best to say, you know what? We can do better as a society. And that's it. Nothing more than that. And that is my show for this week. I hope you've enjoyed it. And remember, if we can dream it, we can certainly do it. Bye now.
What's your point, David?